When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Ali Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On this giant edition of the pod, well, fo-fo-fum, after the first leg of their Champions League quarterfinal, Villarreal must be smelling blood in the Bayern auditorium. Also, talking of whiffing an Englishman, when the Goliaths of the Premier League take on the Goliaths of Madrid for the second leg of their quarterfinals, who will have the sling and the stone and who will have the donkey jawbone? And Erik ten Hag, apparently ready and waiting to dot the I's and cross the T's on a Man United contract. But what's he got in his locker room? We're talking the beautiful game behind the beautiful name. So, well, Andy, let's start with Madrid. Gosh, they were taking on the two giants.
But which Madrid? That's the question, yeah.
The giants of Madrid were taking on, you could argue, the giants of the Premier League as well, yeah?
Yes.
Should we take them one at a time? Because they had mixed fortunes and yet the same fortune, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's funny because I think if you look at both Madrid teams, it didn't really go. It went pretty much to plan for both of them, albeit with slightly differing results. I guess we start with Atletico because they went first, and because they've received a lot of heat for, you know, ostensibly not laying a glove on Manchester City, because you start a game with Joao Felix, Antoine Griezmann, you don't have a shot. But it felt like so much of that game was in their control. I mean, it's something we spoke about on the Ramble with Kate and Pete earlier. The fact that in the second half of the game at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea had more efforts on goal, a more meaningful efforts on goal, David, than Manchester City had in the whole of the game against Atletico. Of course, Diego Simeone won't have wanted to lose. They would have liked to show a bit more up front. Although, I have to say, the revisionism of people who don't watch Atletico on a regular basis going, oh, well, this is Atletico, like, you know, they've got loads of top players and, yeah, they never take any risks. I think that's kind of leaving the Manchester City bit out of the equation. Manchester City are really good and they contained them to very, very few actual chances. Oblak was not busy. And I would suggest, David, that although ideally they would have liked the draw, particularly being 0-0 with 70 minutes gone, I think Atletico are in a position that they will not be unhappy with.
No, absolutely not. I think they probably is almost prepared in part to lose 1-0. I think they probably came into it thinking, okay, if we go out of this 0-0, amazing. That is our job absolutely done. If we get out of it, you know, just going back to Madrid 1-0, then they'll be like, all right, okay, that's fine. We can live with that. We can cope with that. When we take it back to Madrid, we've got the attacking power to overturn that tie and also to restrict City. So, yeah, I don't think they'll be particularly disappointed. I think the disappointment stems, I think, continuously from people who watch Atleti and perhaps expect something different from them. And there's a lot of ire and frustration, I think, at what they continuously do.
Would you say, David, that it's a bit of a mini victory what they've achieved in the last couple of Champions League games, particularly those two in Manchester, to get back to a point where they can defend effectively? Because they've not done that for long periods of this season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They've been woeful against a much lesser opposition. They've been extremely susceptible at the back. I think this is probably one of the worst Atleti defences during Diego Simeone's time at the club. It isn't watertight how it used to be. It isn't the heady days of Godin and Miranda and Felipe Luis and Co. And that is why I think they play even more defensive than ever, because they don't have enough security in their defence anymore.
So the whole team has to defend, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't think even Oblak's been on it either. Oblak's form has dipped considerably, I think.
It's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, though, isn't it? Because I think the defence, he's lost trust in them, so yeah, it's made him make worse decisions on crosses, etc. But it kind of felt in the Manchester United tie that Oblak has come back to something resembling his best form. I don't know what you think about this, but I think bringing in a very defensive left back in Ronaldo, who's been part of that back three, has made a massive difference.
Yeah, he's been excellent. And I think that's very rare for, you know, you look at Letty signings that come in. The thing is, the old adage is they take so long to adapt, and sometimes takes me only about a year before he goes, all right, okay, I might start you. but Ronaldo's come in and he's been phenomenal. He's got it straight away. And don't get me wrong, I think part of it has been out of absolute necessity. They don't have anybody else there. But he's come in and he's got it straight away. He isn't careless. He's very, very sensible. He's very, very secure. He doesn't go on wild forays up the field. He completely gets what he has to do first. I think Kieran Trippier got it as well, really well. It should be said as well from the off. So, he's been a big factor. And the game was completely spun on one change, and that was Phil Foden when he came in.
Mm. Well, this is a dangerous game, isn't it? To go into the first leg thinking, well, 1-0, we can live with that. Because now in the second leg, they are going to attack. They're going to have to attack. Doesn't that weaken the defence then? Doesn't that make them even more vulnerable?
They're going to have to take a risk at some point. There's no doubt about that. Having said that, I think there are two things in Atletico's favour. One, I don't think you can play quite like they did in Manchester if there's away goals count.
Yeah.
Because getting an away goal doesn't really matter. So that's huge, and that makes it a kind of one-off. The other thing is, and I realise there's a gap between Manchester United and Manchester City, the way they started against Manchester United. And actually, if you go back to far more defensive Diego Simeone teams, so in 2014, 2016, on some of those runs to the final, a lot of those knockout ties, Atleti go for it. Almost like, you know, you think of Liverpool swarming over people at Anfield in the first 20 minutes. That big first 20 minutes is something that Atletico have in them.
Yeah.
And this current Atletico have in them. And we saw that against Manchester United, and particularly with João Félix and Ángel Correa setting the pace.
Absolutely. And I think that's what it needs. They need to have a lot more pace. I think when they attack, they can get very, very slow at times. And I think it's going to be the key thing. And again, it's something that it's been a discussion point during the week is, okay, you've got a player right now who's one of the most in form in Europe in João Félix. Why don't you use him? Why don't you give him the ball more? I think they tried. I think there was only one instance where he could have an actual bit of a slalom runner he likes, and he ended up getting crowded out and dispossessed by João Cancelo. He's going to be the key, I think, for Atleti in the second leg. He's the player with the most quality that they have, João Félix, and they have to get him on the ball straight away. In that opening 20, 30 minutes, they need to set the tone if they are to control the game. But part of me still thinks that they are going to play defensive in that game, and they're going to say, oh, Pep's of the philosophy, the mentality of attack and to score goals. So they're going to say to Atleti, oh, come at us. And they're going to defend again, and they're going to try and hopefully pounce on those gaps that perhaps Cancelo leaves and such down that side with João Félix.
You mentioned key, so I have to go back there. Who has got the key, Zim Zimmer, to Benzema? Well, you laugh, but it's true, because I heard Thomas Tuchel, he wasn't happy. He certainly didn't have the key to Benzema.
He didn't.
No. And Benzema surprised everybody. Yeah. So, once again, Zimmer. Who got the key to Benzema?
Carlo Ancelotti.
Ah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, because I think the way he's managing him is smart. He's looking after him very, very well. I think it would have been easy if you look at a couple of situations. When he was recovering from his hamstring injury, they played it very gently with him, despite public pressure and I think club pressure to throw him back in. And Ancelotti kind of shielded him from that. And you look at him now, you know, he's back in absolutely prime form for the key part of the season, for April.
Yeah.
Like, so rather than take a risk with him early on, they were very, very careful with him, and they're going to make the most of it, because April is the point where you need him fit to absolutely smash it, and he is ready to do that. Now, I think what Real Madrid did so well, I said earlier that I think the shape and the position in which they played at Chelsea wasn't really that different to what they did against Paris. You know, they started defending, you know, reasonably deep, but I think what's interesting, that the big difference from Paris is they had Vinicius as their outball. They couldn't get Vinicius in the game at all in the away game in France. Whereas this time, and all season, David, it's not just about Benzema on his own. It's about the link between Vinicius and Benzema. And that's what we saw again to open the door last night.
Absolutely. Because Vinicius, you give him the ball, he pushes you up automatically 25, 30 yards. And then your defence can come out and you push up, and then that's when you start to smother the other team. And that changes the context of the game when he ends up doing that. Because Real Madrid aren't a overtly attacking team. They do like to sit in. But the reason they do that is because they know they've got that outball of Vinicius and what he can do. And he can carry you straight up the pitch, and you can gazump teams.
And it's not just the Benzema goals, is it? Actually, when you're talking about getting them on the front foot and them transitioning quickly, The return, I think you look at that opening goal, and obviously it's a great header from Benzema. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an extraordinary header. You need to watch it a couple of times, really, don't you? It's the return ball when Vinicius plays it into Benzema about 40 yards from goal.
Yep.
The quality of the return ball, that's what Benzema has always been, isn't it? So whereas, you know, the muscles and the power in the air is something he's picked up, he's trained himself to do a long time. That could have been 19-year-old Benzema playing that pass in to the channel.
It's a good point about 19-year-old Benzema, because the question I was going to ask, although I think Dan has tweeted us a question that asked the same kind of thing in a much better way. The question I was going to ask is whether we now have to talk about strikers and the way that you once talked about goalkeepers, that they get better with age, if you look after them right. Mm-hmm. What Dan asks is whether Benzema's absence from the French national team has actually worked in his favour, because he's getting a sort of recall back into the national team, but he had that long absence, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. No, Andy, I think you'll know about this more than me when it comes to France.
Well, no, I don't think so, actually, because I think it's partly about the use of his time. I think in terms of him going away and training his body, I think Dan's got a point. Yeah. Because, you know, we think about players having a little bit more in the tank, whereas I think now, you look at his form and he's still able to do it every week with Madrid. He turns up for France and is still the business. So he's balanced it out quite well. Maybe he has got a little bit more in the tank because of rest and recovery between games. But I don't know. I think personally, David, it's because he's worked on his body, so he's ready for it.
I think as well. I think maybe Ronaldo's had a big factor as well. I think when you're training alongside him and you're looking at the methods that he uses, that he does, I think a lot of people do look at that. He makes people change what they're doing. And Benzema thought, okay, I'm in pretty good condition still. But then Ronaldo's in the dressing room and you see what he's doing and you're like, all right, okay, maybe I could be better. Maybe I could do something. And we're seeing that right now. And what, Benzema's 34, but he was roaming around there last night. You know, like we say, a teenager or early 20s, unbelievable hunger. And I think confidence as well. And I think somebody with that ability that he has got, natural skill set that he's got, that we saw that guy who burst through from Lyon, incredible technical ability, but he's unbelievably confident right now and he's so assured. And that comes with the age, and that's why he's matured so well, I think.
Allí otra vez intentando para colocar el centro, atención, no, Vinicius Junior atrás jugó para Toni Kroos, le pegó, qué golazo, Benzema, gol.
So let's talk some more Champions League business. Let me introduce this by saying, obviously, Andy, David is David.
Yes.
Yeah, and this was a giant episode of the podcast.
Yes.
Somebody has to be Goliath, and it's not me. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind, because we're talking about, you know, a giant slaying, maybe or otherwise. Bayern and Villarreal. Oh, my word. Villarreal arguably threw away the opportunity to slay Bayern the other night. Threw away the opportunity. They still beat them, but it should have been a giant killing, shouldn't it?
Of course it could. Of course it should have been. But it just bore incredible resemblance to the first leg against Salzburg. I couldn't believe it. It was terrifying. It was almost a blueprinted copycat performance from Emery. And don't get me wrong, I know it was his own doing because I've seen him do this performance so many years with his teams. But it was incredible. They pressed up on Bayern. Villarreal pressed up on Bayern, which Salzburg did, to the sense that they smothered them and they didn't allow them to play out the back. Villarreal wasted an incredible amount of chances as well. Salzburg also did that. And then they nearly allowed Bayern back into it at the end. And that's the only bit of this that Villarreal got away with. Obviously, Salzburg conceded quite late on. And unfortunately undid overall a fantastic performance. And Villarreal nearly did that, but they got away with it. And it was a really, really good performance in Villarreal. It should have been 2 or 3. I think Thomas Muller missed a great, great chance for
possibly
Bayern as well.
4.
Yeah, yeah,
possibly
exactly. 4. I think so. And yeah, I think it was Emery in his domain. He knows this knockout system very well. I know it's a different competition, but Champions League, it's a natural progression for him. And I think this is what people have wanted from him. I don't think Emery, he's not a league-winning manager. I don't think he is. So I think the Champions League knockout stages are a brilliant natural progression for him and what people want from him. And to say, okay, if you are better than what everybody thinks you are, then you need to step up here. I think this was a great case for that last night, that he actually did that. He knows how to play it, his game management, the adjustments that he makes. He knows how to handle big sides really, really well. Medium level sides really well. I think it's when they face the smaller teams that he perhaps comes a little bit undone. But this was his domain last night.
Why would that be? Why would he come undone with the smaller teams?
I think because it's a case of looking up and pointing out the weaknesses of bigger teams. I think, you know, I think there's areas there to exploit that not a lot of teams actually do. I think if you look at football on a grand scale, I think sometimes smaller teams stand off bigger teams. They give them far too much respect. Whereas when Emery's facing a bigger team, he likes to exploit little holes in them and get at them. And big teams aren't used to being got at. And I think this was a great example of that last night, that he really saw weaknesses to exploit in Bayern, and they nearly made this an even more emphatic performance.
Well, I tell you one thing that he exploited with this big giant team called Bayern Munich is the fact, well, was it an exploitation? The fact that Lewandowski was almost playing in midfield for some of this match, I just thought was outstanding performance. For whatever Villarreal did to force him back to go and collect the ball or defend was just amazing.
Well, I thought Pau Torres played him really well. Mm-hmm. Pau Torres played all of Bayern's front line really well. I think he had one of the best games I've seen him have, certainly this season. Obviously, he's had his moments where he's played like a prince for Spain and showed why Real Madrid, before they didn't have any money, wanted to spend 40 million plus on him. He's showed moments for Villarreal and Spain in the last year where he's looked as if like his concentration needs a lot of work as well. And, you know, there have been a few, well, we saw it in the recent international break with that mix-up between him and Unai Simon, didn't we, against Albania. That was a very Spain in Euro 2020 type goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, on his day, he's magnificent. There's no doubt about it. But I think it's the whole team, really, and the experience. Emery's talked about this before. He talked about it before against Juventus as well. The fact that, you know, you talked about Salzburg, David, and I think they kind of ran out of steam a little bit through the physical effort they put in.
Yep.
Villarreal paced themselves a lot better, and they were, for that reason, able to counter-attack better. Even if they didn't actually take the chances, they created the chances in the first place. Now, the one we all wanted to go in was that Gerard Moreno shot from his own half.
You want to describe that one, mate?
Well, after Neuer made a mess of it and lost it when he was trying to recycle the ball. But Moreno gets it in the Bayern, he gets it in the Villarreal half of the centre circle.
How does he get it? That was amazing. That, you see that on a five-a-side on a Sunday. You know, when you're playing five-a-side, you're trying to get past a player and he sticks his back leg out, you know, just to catch your ball as it's supposed to go behind him.
But everything about, when we talk about the experience, you know, you think about Albiol, you think of Capu, you think of Dani Parejo. But I think when you get to the goal that Villarreal scored in the first half, it all comes from a really smart Gerard Moreno pass inside Alphonso Davies that sort of opens it up. Now, it wasn't even a penultimate pass. I think penultimate passes should be recorded as alongside assists, because often there is beautiful pre-assists. There we go. But I mean, that wasn't, because there were three more touches before it ended up in the net. But that, I think, is a great example of not just how he scores the goals, but how he sees the game.
Yeah.
To have a striker that can map the game out like that. And when he wasn't in the team, when he was injured in the first half of the season, it was an absolutely huge blow for them, because he was massive for them in Europe last season. But going over to the Bayern side, the thing that we keep coming back to in Germany, and sort of certainly German media are discussing a lot, there's a school of thought that thinks Bayern cannot win the Champions League playing like this, because they have one attacking player too many in the lineup. Something we talked about here on OTC before. I couldn't understand with what was, I mean, one of the most thrilling 1-0 games I've seen in a very long time. I mean, it was exciting, right?
Yeah.
But why did Bayern chase it like they desperately needed an away goal?
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, David, Villarreal had the chances to kill it, but Bayern kind of let them have the chances to kill it, because they just went for it like almost without thinking in that second half and left themselves quite vulnerable. And, you know, if it hadn't been for a bit of wayward finishing, we'd be talking about a completely different
result. Do you not think that's a Nagelsmann thing, though? Do you not think there's more?
I think it is, yeah.
Do you think there's a big, as talented as he is, and entertaining his team's art to watch, I sometimes think they lack a little bit of methodical presence there in games.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder how much of it is him,
yeah,
and how much of it is the existing Bayern structure, because they played not just exciting football, but absolutely reckless football under Hansi Flick.
Yeah.
And for that reason, it's really interesting to see how Germany get on against better teams in the World Cup when they get to Qatar. Mm-hmm. I think, though, the balance of the team is an issue, especially when Alphonso Davies, of course, like coming back in, it's great news for him and it's great news for them. You know, a fullback who's really going to go. You need cover. And I don't think you need Musiala, a wonderful player as he is. And he did his best to help out defensively and quite successfully on some occasions. I think they miss Goretzka. Now, bear in mind, Goretzka came back at the weekend against Freiburg in an extraordinary game where they had 12 men for a little bit, of course, before that was rectified. Not necessarily to the satisfaction of the authorities. Watch this space. We'll see if that result gets overturned. But Goretzka scored the opening goal in that. And I know we talk a lot about his muscles, but his physicality is huge for them.
Yeah.
And him and Kimmich understand each other on and off the pitch. Those two in the centre of midfield for Bayern or for Germany. And they didn't want to play him two games in a row in 4 days, and I get that. If they can get Goretzka, if they can get through this round, if they get Goretzka fit to play the rest of the games going forward, I think that changes what Bayern are.
I think so. I think if you had him on the field last night, Emery isn't able to control the game and mould it in the way that he did.
Maybe,
that was the big difference last night, like you said. The Bayern got caught up a little bit. They got a bit hectic. They got a bit panicked, whether it was through Nagelsmann or the players or not. But Emery was methodical. He was calm. And don't get me wrong, Emery's somebody who's had his fair share of hectic, panicky performances down the years. He's got a lot. If anybody knows about the team,
might have another one next week.
Yeah, he could.
Hey, please don't anticipate it. Go live.
So to see them with such calm last night, especially with the players that you mentioned, and also I thought two big Tottenham duds were excellent in Foyth and Lo Celso.
No way.
I cannot believe it's the same player.
I'm sure Spurs fans were watching last night just thinking, are these the guys we just couldn't get wait to get rid of? But they've gone to that, you know, where broken toys get fixed, you know, sort of thing, and there have been two great examples of that under Emery.
But David, you have hurt Goliath, but you had a whole satchel full of slings and stones there. You haven't caught him between the eyes. You should have hit him with every single one. So I have to turn to Goliath. And this is a question from Helmut. So imagine, Andy, you've been hurt with a stone. Should have been right between the eyes, but
is
it
wasn't.
Is
this Helmut's voice or yours?
Good question. Okay. Helmut's question is, how many are Bayern, and he seems confident that they will, how many are Bayern putting past Villarreal in the return leg?
You know what? I think everything about this game is about how Villarreal start it. They will get the chances. They will get the chances. I don't have any doubt about that. Now, where it all went wrong for Salzburg, I think people can look at the result and say, Bayern beat them 7-1. It was never in doubt. Well, it kind of was. Like, Salzburg had the best two chances in the first 10 minutes of that before they had that whole Werber flip out with Lewandowski. Clearly, they need to keep their nerve, and we can't have Paris Saint-Germain in the Camp Nou again. But when you get those early chances, take them. And then we've got something interesting.
David?
It's going to be a big knife for Emery's legacy, I think. Because he's really, really going against a narrative that he collapses at key moments. And this is, he can really undo a lot of that with this performance in this second leg. If they put out in a shoe performance, if he doesn't press that button where I always say full on Emery, if he never go full Unai Emery, because some crazy things happen. So if he keeps his hand off that button, then they can go through. But I think Bayern are going to put 2 or 3 on. But I think Villarreal might put 2 or 3 on as well.
Do you agree with Andy, though? It's got to be in the first 20 minutes of the game or so.
Absolutely. It's going to define everything, I think.
aquest nano internacional no el faran avui, no. El següent, que ja no sé què és.
I demanarà la pilota d'or.
4. El 7 de la segona marca el 4-0 Jeremy Pino.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So we have to turn to David to bring us the latest on the breaking news from, is it from Ajax or is it from Old Trafford? Because we still are not quite sure what's going to happen with regards to Erik ten Hag.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a bit of both, shall we say. We got the story in yesterday, ESPN, very early on the morning. And obviously the inclination, I think a lot of the time when you're in a newsroom is to break with something like that, especially with this. I made the point before I came on air, there's probably no bigger story in football this summer, other than maybe where Haaland ends up as well, you know. So but I think between who's going to be the new Man United boss and where Haaland's going to go, two biggest stories in football. So and we sat on it a little bit because, you know, you want to be really, really sure with a thing like this. Like, absolutely, you can't just go spraying out. And I think a lot of people have the view, the idea of journalism is that, you know, things get made up or you do things for hits. And trust me, maybe in some
you
places...
Do it quick,
exactly. And I think in some places it probably is the case. For us, though, we sat on it for quite a while yesterday. We really, really waited. We wanted to be sure. We wanted to know we had the right details. We wanted to know it came from the right place. For us, it did absolutely come from the right place. And we got some double sourcing later on in the day that made us think, right, we can go with this. But we were going to wait. We were going to not post it that day. We were going to wait maybe till next week to try and get more over the weekend and such. But we ended up getting that. We put it out there. And from what we have, Erik ten Hag will be the next Manchester United manager.
Without a doubt. But what can he offer? What does Erik ten Hag have? Because everybody's going on about him.
Well, a philosophy, which is a start, because I think that's what Manchester United have lacked. They've lacked a playing identity. I think the things that concern you from this season is Ralf Rangnick has tried to impose a playing identity and the players have not been receptive. Now, partly that's due to the circumstances around his appointment.
He was
of course.
A caretaker. He was always a caretaker.
Yeah, he was interim. And,
did he
and of course,
that? When
and
he of, believed it.
Well, I think the thing is, because he has this very woolly title of advisor afterwards, you don't even know if he's got influence going forward. You know, it would not be surprising if his 2-year advisorship turned out to be something very remote that was maybe effectively killed off within the first year. The problem is the idea of Rangnick coming in and doing a kind of stock take with the first team. I think there's sense in that. But when the players don't really know what his influence is, when the players don't really know what sort of authority he has, then you've got a bit of an issue. I wonder if the two of them could work together. Maybe that's something that will happen going forward. I really have my doubts over that. And my concern with Erik ten Hag, who has moulded not just one, but two very, very good Ajax teams. And by very good, I mean with nowhere near United money. They've created teams with the ability to challenge to win the Champions League, which is, like, we know about the historical context of Ajax, but in the modern world, that is amazing. I think that is really amazing. I have a few little concerns. The first one of those is the football structure around him strong enough? Now, we know Mark Overmars is no longer at Ajax, that he was disgraced. He was quite rightly removed from his position. But we have to acknowledge at the same time that Erik ten Hag and him work very well together. And they dovetail very well together. And ten Hag loved working with him. So can they find someone similar as a foil, whether it be Rangnick or anyone else at the club, to really have that click? I mean, I'm not sure if Darren Fletcher's that guy. So how the structure works, and United have done a lot to sort out their scouting and transfers, which is not often acknowledged in the last couple of years. But in terms of an overarching philosophy, it feels like United are still reaching for that, and that's why they ended up in this sort of half-hearted Rangnick experiment, though never fully in. So I think that Ten Hag needs that support. I think the move to get Steve McClaren as an assistant, because he knows...
he's worked with him at 20, wasn't
he? Yeah, yeah, he has. And so he knows him and he knows United. I think that there's a lot to recommend that.
Yeah.
I think the other interesting thing, though, with Ten Hag, there's been the sense in the Netherlands recently that, you know, Ajax should still win the league this season, especially as they got through last weekend with their win at Groningen. PSV dropped points at Twente with a couple of goals for Ricky van Wolfswinkel, actually, who's playing for Twente and having a pretty good season there. So they're 5 points clear again. But I think people are talking a lot about maybe Ten Hag's getting found out. You look at the amount of goals they're letting in the last couple of months. Ajax went through the first little bit of the season conceding none. They have this enormous goal difference, which of course is part of their goal power, but also the fact that they weren't conceding any goals. That's no longer the case. It seems like it's easier to get at them now. The other issue I would have is, if you look at Ajax in Europe, what's remarkable, and this is not just a Ten Hag thing, because as we said before when we talked about it, it goes back to 1996. They don't win at home in the knockouts of the Champions League. That's a bit of an issue. And I sense the first season that when Ajax got to the semi-finals of the Champions League in 2019, all those good performances were away, weren't they? Juventus, at Real Madrid, at Spurs, and they lose the home leg. Now, maybe it's tactical. Maybe it's emotional mastery of the occasion. And, you know, Amsterdam is immense. I think it's a lot to deal with in the Johan Cruyff Arena. But especially with United struggling to really express themselves at home, that would be a little concern for me as well.
David?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the main thing. I think there's a lot of things. Don't get me, I think he is the right choice. It's a very, very good choice. Don't get me wrong. I did like, I mean, it came down to a straight fight between him and Pochettino for the job. Other names were in the ring, you know, your Luis Enriquez and such. I think even Brendan Rodgers was looked at one point. But it came down to a straight fight between Ten Hag and Pochettino. They've gone with Ten Hag, I think, because I think they realise there is a bigger job here at play, and that is the restructure and rebuild at the very top and around him that is going to be in place. I think that's I think it's the most important thing for Man United to get right. It's imperative for them to get their football structure right. When Pep Guardiola came to Manchester City, they made sure they put a lot of his friends from Barcelona and such around him. Jurgen Klopp had an incredible system put around him and structure put around him. So these guys weren't just dropped in, given players randomly, and then everything just came together. No, there was a clear structure put in place. So I think, first of all, that's what Manchester United have to do above anything. Ten Hag himself, I think it's everything what Andy said. I think he's very bright. I think it's a very positive move. He's got a clear philosophy of how to play. And coming back to Andy's point is they're going to need to express themselves as well, I think, very clearly early on in his era in terms of style. I'm not saying carbon copy of what Ajax did, but it's going to need to be positive and bold. And I think people are going to then give him time and allow him to, you know, to develop it. Man United.
You've already answered this, but Jack did tweet, is he a better fit for Man United than Mauricio Pochettino? And the answer is clearly yes from you. Is it from you as well, Andy?
I don't know if it is. I think because, I don't know, it depends which way you look at it. Because I think David makes a very persuasive case. I think Pochettino, for now, because he's more of a manager than a head coach, he makes up for the fact that sort of football brains trust and that football management side of Manchester United, something that, you know, Louis van Gaal sort of mocked and said that Ten Hag shouldn't go there because they were a commercial club, not a sports club, didn't he? I think Pochettino more immediately plugs those gaps because he's got not just a philosophy on the pitch, but a philosophy off the pitch and something that runs throughout the club. Whether he would have got that much influence, I think, is another question. There are all these questions about Manchester United and the way they run things that we need answered, really. But in terms of what David was saying, in terms of if you want to actually work on that structure, which will work not just for Ten Hag, but for future coaches as well, and get United back on the right track, I think that's a persuasive argument.
I think if you appoint Ten Hag, you say it needs ripping up, it needs rebuilding. We are years off. We don't mind taking a few years to try and get back to the top. I've said this, the first year needs to be a free pass with Ten Hag. Second year, he's assessed things in that first year and makes some big decisions, makes some changes that he wants. Third year, I think little tweaks, tightening things up. He should be getting there about where he wants. Years 4 and 5 should be absolutely Man United looking at getting back among that top rung. I'm not about just in the Premier League. I'm not even about Europe's elite because they are way off in the Premier League right now. There's 5-6 clubs well ahead of them. And when in terms of recruitment, there might be even more. So I think they've recognised Man United that they need to completely rip it up and start again, which I think is the right way to go. Pochettino, Andy touched on this. He said he would plug some gaps. I don't think Man United can do any more plugging. I think they need to completely start again afresh.
And already there are a lot of players that are being associated with a possible transfer to Manchester United when this Erik ten Hag deal is finally done. Adam on Instagram says, are there any young strikers in Europe in particular who Ten Hag might be considering now as bringing into Old Trafford?
It's interesting. When you're talking about centre forwards, Sebastian Haller would do a really good job for them, wouldn't he? You know, his current centre forward.
I get that. You know who I'm going to see, though?
Go on.
Darwin Nunez.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think Darwin would be great.
Well, I mean, Ten Hag's had a bit of a more of a first-hand view of him than he would ideally have liked in the Champions League this season.
Instead of shelling 120, 130, Harry Kane's been linked this morning, of course he has. instead of shelling 120, 130 million him.
Wasn't it 170?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, Jesus, yeah. And then he's weird.
If you're paying, it can be what he likes.
That's something else they need to get away from as well. And hopefully Ten Hag would look at that sort of thing and say, no, we need to go to a different direction.
That idea, though, that Adam touches on and that David touches on of like young players who they can build with, I really like that.
Yeah.
I think when you look at midfield, I would not be surprised to see them have a little pop at Ryan Gravenberch from Ajax. And I think he's a player who is not quite there yet, but if you work towards him being in the sort of role that Pogba was meant to fill, I like that.
I wouldn't even be bothered about signing immediate impact players, and that's a great example. Players who you can work with. I love Kamara. I've mentioned him before. Kamara from Salzburg, another one, another brilliant, brilliant player.
He's good.
Massive projection, and that's the sort of players they need to get away from there. And look, I love Declan Rice, but I think they need to get away from the Declan Rices and the Harry Kanes. They need to be looking at players that they can work with and shape into the style that Ten Hag wants.
And I'm sure he's listening, by the way.
He better be.
So we've answered a lot of your questions today, and we would like more because we do love having a conversation with you as well. You know, you can get hold of us anytime during the week on social media at Davey Jacker, at Andy Brassel, at Dotton Adebayo, and at Football Ramble. So let's move straight on to a game of the week that you might want to recommend for us. Have you got one, David?
I have indeed. Saturday, 5:30. It's a very, very tasty Berlin derby.
Tasty. I'm getting hungry already. Tell us more.
In a minute. Wait for it. We'll talk about the football first and then the food bit later. But yes, 5:30 Saturday, Hertha Berlin versus Union Berlin. And just announced as well, I was licking my lips, and another reference to food there, before we came on air saying this to Andy, but it's going to be been given an extra allocation to Union Berlin fans. So there's going to be just under 12,000 there. Which is good.
To reiterate, that's 12,000 Union fans.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it's cavernous, the Olympiastadion.
And that is going to be good. I watched a very, diet Old Firm game at the weekend where there was a small allocation of away fans. That isn't a proper Old Firm, and this wouldn't be a proper derby. 12,000 fans, away fans, that's going to be magnificent. You know, Union playing with a chance of Europe, fighting off relegation. Felix McGarth's involved. Come on, what else are you doing on 5:30 on Saturday?
Well, that is very tasty.
Yeah, yeah.
What should we have with that little dish of yours?
Oh, I tell you what, I'm not going to recommend German food because it's terrible. It's absolutely
harsh.
It's absolutely dead. Yeah. So we're not even going to go there.
Did they not give us a Frankfurter at least? So,
fan mail to David Jacker.
So at the risk of going very hard Brexit here, I want to recommend sausages, mash, and some onion gravy.
The way that we do it.
Oh, the way that we do it. The way that the Brits do it. Yeah,
this is extremely controversial, suggesting sausages that aren't German.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm going against. I'm really sticking two fingers.
And are you
going
to wash it down with something from there or from here?
A nice cold glass of Carlin. No, I'm kidding. It's horrible. I'm kidding. No.
Make it a beer fest.
Yeah, yeah. Go on, you can have a German beer with it, okay. Then go on. Yeah,
whichever,
go on.
Yeah.
If you must.
Yes, he wants. So, Andy, after that, follow that, please, with the game of the week.
Well, you know what? There's another good game in Germany. We've had a few questions recently about Bundesliga 2, the second tier in Germany. There's a big one this weekend on Saturday lunchtime between St. Pauli and Werder Bremen. St. Pauli are in the playoff spot, of course, the county countercultural club of Hamburg. They have a great story. It's a great match experience with lots of sausages and beer involved. Playing Werder Bremen, who are just from up the road, an hour up the road, and who are top at the moment, aiming to come back to the top flight of the first attempt. So that will be good. I believe it's on British telly this weekend because they've started showing Bundesliga 2 games as well, so that will be exciting. But the one I want to go for, I love a Sunday night. I love a big Sunday night. I'm always there in studio with Danny Kelly. We've always got all the games on. Marseille versus Montpellier for a bit of, you know, southern French, hopefully nice weather as we head into April. Marseille looking to cement their place in the Champions League. But the reason I'm really looking at this is because this week, we know that we've had all the players from Russia and Ukraine, the foreign players, be allowed to go and play elsewhere. One of those players, or one of his players who left Russia, was Remy Cabella, who formerly of Marseille, who has found his way back to Montpellier, the club that he grew up with, which was wonderful to see. And he'll be playing for his new old club at his old club this weekend. I know he didn't quite come off in Newcastle, but he's bloody great to watch, Remy Cabella. I love him. So that's something that's very exciting.
And you've got to have a fruit de mer to go with it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously with Marseille, it's all about the fish stew, about the bouillabaisse.
Yeah, bouillabaisse.
So if you want to spend Sunday cooking that, it's all good. If you want the quick option, hop over the border and more free. I reckon that'll take you 10 minutes.
Mange-toi.
Bien sûr.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.